Good afternoon, Juno. It's Wednesday, March 5th, 2014, Ash Wednesday. It's 2:59 p.m., and it's time for a Juno Afternoon. Today on the show, my guests are going to be Patricia Hall and Cy Khan, who will be here to highlight this week's performances of Mother Jones. We'll get a preview of this week's Wildlife Wednesday presentation on Cowie Creek with guest Richard Carstensen. We'll talk with Gary Anderson in town to give performances of the play Naked Darrow about American attorney Clarence Darrow, and we'll get an update on the activities at Eagle Crest. These guests, Writer's Almanac, Bird Notes, some music, and more today on a Juno Afternoon. Stay with us.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A vigil is being held today in Ottawa in front of the Canadian Parliament for an Inuit woman whose body was found a week ago in New Brunswick. The 26-year-old university student had been working on a thesis about murdered and missing Aboriginal women in Canada. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
Loretta Saunders disappeared in mid-February. Her body was found a week ago on a highway median in New Brunswick. Police have two suspects in custody. Friends and volunteers who had searched for Saunders gathered at a news conference in Halifax to thank the community for its support for the Inuit woman from Labrador. Cheryl Maloney is the head of the Native Women's Association of Nova Scotia. She says her group was in shock after it learned of Saunders' death. And Maloney renewed a call for a national inquiry into the high rate of violent deaths among Canada's Native women.
For Canada to be ignoring it for so long, it's disheartening. How many more families does this have to happen to before they take serious the problem? The inequity of Aboriginal people, and you know, the problems our girls face in this world growing up in Canada. We shouldn't be growing up in a country where we're at risk to be missing and murdered more than anyone else.
Saunders was 3 months pregnant. Her sister says she was set to graduate from university in May. Members of Saunders' family traveled to Halifax to make public appeals for help in finding her. A vigil was held for her last week in Halifax, another one today in Ottawa. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
President Obama's 2015 budget request includes $2.6 billion for Indian Affairs. That's a more than $33 million increase from fiscal year 2014. Tristan Autone has more.
Here are the highlights of what that money will be used for. The Bureau of Indian Education will get a small bump for construction, grants, and tribal colleges. Tribes using money for 638 contracts will see an increase in funds for contract support costs. More money for social services, Indian child welfare programs, housing, job placement, and training programs, and finally, slight increases to address land and water rights settlements. Both the U.S. House and Senate agreed to a budget bill in December which fixed spending levels for the next 2 years, making it unlikely that the president's budget will be considered by lawmakers. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
A South Dakota Head Start program has plans to build a multi-million dollar facility. As Jim Kent reports, it serves Native American families.
Bruce Longfox is executive director of Rural America Initiative's Rapid City office. The nonprofit is responsible for the Head Start and Early Head Start centers in the West River town and similar locations on the Crow Creek Sioux Reservation. Longfox says the buildings Head Start currently occupies are more than 20 years old and long overdue for an upgrade. Besides classroom space, the $6 million 28,000 square foot facility will have a kitchen, administrative offices, and meeting rooms, along with outdoor teaching areas and a garden. Longfox tells naysayers there's a simple reason for spending money when the economy is still in flux.
We're not just looking at today. We're looking at the lives of these kids, and there are a lot of needs out there, and I understand that. Education has always been our salvation.
The Shakopee Midwakanen Sioux community has pledged to match up to $250,000 for donations raised toward the new Head Start building by December 18th. The rest of the required financing will come from a federal Head Start grant and monies raised through local, regional, and national fund drives over the next 5 years. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
On this day in 1948, Native American novelist, poet, and short story writer Leslie Marmon Silko was born. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support National Native News. Just use Pick, Click, Give and select KNBA-FM, Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. National Native News is made possible with support from Guest House Anchorage Inn. Wake up with the sun. On the web at guesthousealaska.com. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. My guest now in the studio is Gary Anderson. He's the writer and producer of the play Naked Darrow, which will be in here, Juno, from the 6th through the 9th. And I'm pretty excited about this one. Welcome, Gary.
Thank
you. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you. Actually, I'll only be performing March 7 and 8. But I am here through the 6th or the 9th, and I'm looking for
ways.
Oh,
you're just in the town.
Yeah, I'm just in the town, and I'm performing right now. So,
wow, that's really good. And you said you were going to do a little bit of an excerpt in a few moments here from your play.
I'd love to.
But first, I would like to ask you, how does this – of course, this is based on Clarence Darrow, famous attorney – died in, I think it was 1934. 38,
close.
Okay.
Close.
Well, it's in the 30s. All right. I got part of it. And what makes this play any different from the previous versions of Darrow that have been done by the greats like Henry Fonda and Leslie Nielsen?
I'm awfully glad you asked me that. That play was written almost 40 years ago.
Okay.
And since then, so much new information, so much more revealing personal history of Darrow has come to the fray. Now, Fonda, fantastic actor. Who could touch him? But he was that the white knight sort of version of Darrow. He could do no wrong, very heroic. But as we know, most of our iconic figures, whether they're George Washington or people from the Alamo or even Darrow, they were just as flawed as us. I like a flawed historical figure myself. And Darrow was revealed to have had many, many flaws, including three trials for jury tampering, a number of mistresses, and a really bad drinking problem.
Well, on the good side, he was a major supporter for union rights.
Of course he was. Yes, 17 years, and you've done your research, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
17 years as a labor attorney.
Yes.
He saved 102 men, women, and children from execution. But he succeeded, as we all do in life, in spite of ourselves. And that was a major hurdle for him, was getting out of his own way. And that's why I like him so much. So many people can identify him with him. He's almost like the anti-hero that's in many of our movies these days, with these deep flaws, what comes through in the end. That's a very good observation.
Well, thank you. So based on this, he only had one case that resulted in an execution that he lost.
Well, it wasn't really his case. Now, a lot of people talk about that,
okay.
But he was part of the defense team. So that's from that point on, he had 102 men, women, and children that he saved from execution and never lost one. And that's being brought into question as to how he did that. I mean, there are new books that have come out, many new biographies. Now, you're talking about the difference between the 40-year-old one-man play Clarence Darrow by Rentells and this particular version, which includes all of his flaws and all of the problems and all the questions remaining about what kind of person Darrow was and what influenced him to finally become the lawyer he was meant to be. But there's also a thread that runs through the Naked Darrow thing, and that's what the naked portion is about, him being vulnerable. And this takes place the year before he dies, when he's in full throes of Alzheimer's and dementia, which is, of course, our modern plague affecting millions of people in the nation. And to see him exposing himself in this way, talking about everything that most people would not care to talk about, but he can't help himself as he struggles to hold on to what memories he does have.
Right. So just to make it clear to the people out there, you are not performing the show naked.
if you ask any of my ex-wives and most of my girlfriends, they would definitely pay me to keep my clothes on, right?
Okay. And you are going to read an excerpt from your play, and I would like you to do that now for our listeners.
Sure. Well, Darrow's most famous for the Scopes Monkey Trial, but as you know, labor attorney and various other death penalty cases. This is explaining what he did in the Sweet Trials, which are defending 11 blacks in Detroit who were accused of killing a white man while they were protecting their home from a mob of 1,000 whites. She's explaining, I had picked that jury very carefully. I wanted them to know the psychology of the black race. I asked hard questions of that jury. Would you rather be born black or to be born with no legs? Would you rather be born blind or to be born colored? See, this is the trial where I did my best work, not that monkey trial. That is an embarrassment to this nation. I'd also made sure to include in that jury a fair share of sinners as well as saints. You might ask, why sinners? Well, because I don't trust the holy, God-fearing, and good citizens. These good people who proclaim themselves so, I have found in life that it's not the bad people I fear so much as the good people. When a person is sure that he is good, he's nearly hopeless. It gets cruel. He believes in punishment, godly punishment, with no limitations as long as it's not them. That's an excerpt from his philosophy about the Sweet Trial and how he tried to intersperse the good with the bad in there.
Right.
Yeah.
And is it true that he got kicked out of California?
He did. Actually, he not only got kicked out, but he was disbarred. Now, he was on trial three times for jury tampering in California after his defense of the McNamara brothers. They said he tried to bribe the jury there. First trial was an acquittal. Second trial was hung. They were threatening him with the third trial. And, by then, he was penniless. His career had been ruined. And they gave him a choice. Third trial, or will you accept disbarment with the promise never to return to California, not even on vacation, they said. Well, he skedaddled out of there and never went back to California again.
Wow.
Disbarred. Now, that's not your granddaddy's
dad. Then he went back. Did he go back to Chicago then?
Yeah, he went back to Chicago with his tail between his legs. These are the kind of things that I like to know about my heroes, especially. Now, Darrow's still considered an iconic legal hero in the world, but he had difficulties surmounting his own problems in his own life, and I think that makes him worthy of study. But this aspect of his life, near the end of his life, is a sad, sad end to this great man, a man who could speak 16, 17 hours with no notes to a jury and remember every piece of evidence that was presented to him with nothing in his hand except his fantastic memory that he had. To see that great mind emptying near the end of his life and him being so frightened, now being injected with monkey glands, which is rather ironic since he was called the monkey trial lawyer. But he did not want to be remembered for that trial.
Okay, and we are going to... I mentioned when you came in before the show started that I was going to, if we had the time, to play a little game with you. And we had another guest that sort of dropped out of the schedule today.
I'm ready.
I'm going to do this. These are our quotes. Which ones? Clarence Darrow. Which ones are from Mark Twain?
Mm-hmm.
And which ones Rodney Dangerfield?
Okay, so I'm ready. I'm ready.
There's four from each one here. So let's see if we can do this.
Okay.
If you tell the truth, you don't have to remember anything.
Mark Twain.
Yes, that was Mark Twain. Okay. Lost causes are the only ones worth fighting for.
My hero, Darrow.
Okay, that is Clarence Darrow. Okay. I found there was only one way to look thin. Hang out with fat people.
Dangerfield.
That's Rodney Dangerfield. Okay. All right. I have never killed a man, but I've read many obituaries with great pleasure.
That would be C.D., Mr. Darrow.
Jeez, you know these. All right. Loyalty to the country always. Loyalty to the government when it deserves it.
Twain.
Yes, that is Mark Twain. And... Here's when I was a kid, my parents moved a lot, but I always found them.
Come on. You know that's Rodney. Come on. No respect. I get no respect.
I love Rodney Dangerfield. A lot of women hate him, but I thought he was a genius. He was just great.
I did too.
The law does not pretend to punish everything that is dishonest. That would seriously interfere with business.
Mr. Darrow.
Yes, that is Clarence Darrow. All right. And I told my wife the truth that I was seeing a psychiatrist. Then she told me the truth. She was seeing a psychiatrist, two plumbers, and a bartender.
Let me think. No, got to be Dangerfield.
That's Rodney Dangerfield. All right. But I'm just kind of, some of these quotes you've probably used in the play. The ones from Darrow are good. Okay. If I had known what life would be like when I was born, I'd have asked God to let me off.
Darrow.
Yes, that's Clarence
mm-hmm,
Darrow.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Don't let schooling interfere with your education.
Twain.
Yes, that's Mark Twain. All right. My wife can't cook at all. She made chocolate mousse. An antler got stuck in my throat.
That was me. No, no, Dangerfield.
Yeah, that's Rodney. All right. And let's see. I may have one or two more here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Don't let schooling interfere with your education. I did that one. Okay. Actions speak louder than words, but not nearly as often.
Twain.
Yes, that's Mark Twain. All right. Well, that was all I had, but it's just this is just kind of, you know, a comparison into quotes. But some of these people, mm-hmm. Clarence Darrow had some very good quotable lines, and so did Mark Twain, mm-hmm. and Dangerfield does too.
Yeah, and it's
so
good.
It's just
it's
kind
mean,
of running the
comparison. Yeah,
there's
like
there.
There's a number of websites that have those kind of quotes on it, and they are kind of peppered throughout the Naked Darrow presentation. You know, which is going to be a, I think it's going to be a very attractive program to a lot of people who want to see more about Darrow's private life, not the seamy side necessarily, but who were his influences. Certainly, his mother and father gave him his backbone and his love of social justice and his love for the fair and equal treatment. I mean, even in, when he was doing with the labor unions, so he even knew Mother Jones, by the way, who I understand is an upcoming guest that you have following me.
Well, yeah, the performances of Mother Jones.
That's right.
Patricia Hall and Cy Kahn,
right.
who are supposed to be first up, but we're just shuffling things around
no.
a little bit.
She's going to be great.
Yeah. Patricia's had a long run in the Nashville community and mm-hmm. theater, so I'm looking
yeah.
very
I
much forward
up.
To having her. You looked her
I looked
up, too.
Her up.
Okay. All right. And anything else you wanted to add about your show?
Well, it's got an underscoring of original bassoon music, which was written kind of like a movie soundtrack. It has some great special effects. But I particularly find that the music of the bassoon is a very melancholic score, but it has a wide range of character voices as well. So I think you'd be surprised. The sunroom is a great location, the second floor of the urgent family care clinic there, and it's just a lovely space for intimate theater. And I will be walking among the audience, as Darrow would do as he's talking to the jury.
Okay. And please remind everybody when and where it is. You just kind of let a little bit out there.
All right. Well, it's March 7 and 8, Friday and Saturday at 7 p.m., location is the sunroom, second floor at the Juno Urgent and Family Care Building. Juno Urgent and Family Care Building, 8505 Old Dairy Road.
All right, and is there any fee for this show?
Actually,
or?
It's a pay-what-you-wish admission, and some of the donations will be also going to the Juno Urgent Family Care Scholarship Fund.
Okay, a very worthy cause, and everybody, if you can't attend, it's Friday and Saturday night. Gary Anderson, thank you so much for being our guest
You're
in the
welcome.
Studio today. It was great having you.
Best looking toupee in Alaska.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 5th of March, 2014. It was on this day, 1933, the Nazi Party in Germany won 44% of the vote in parliamentary elections, which enabled it to join with the Nationalists to gain a slight majority in the Reichstag. And within 3 weeks, the Reichstag had passed the Enabling Act, which gave Hitler dictatorial powers. It was on this day in 1975 that the Homebrew Computer Club first met in a garage near Menlo Park in Silicon Valley. 1975, computers were not for personal use. They were gigantic, could take up an entire room, could cost about $1 million apiece. Among the early members of the Homebrew Computer Club were high school friends Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak, who designed the Apple I and the Apple II to bring down to the Homebrew Computer Club and show it off. It's the birthday of the novelist Frank Norris, Chicago, 1870, author of McTeague, died at 32 of a ruptured appendix, having written 2 books of his Epic of Wheat trilogy, The Octopus and The Pit. Frank Norris, who said, "I never truckled, I never took off the hat to fashion and held it out for pennies. By God, I told them the truth. They liked it or they didn't like it." It's the birthday of the novelist Leslie Marmon Silco, born Albuquerque, 1948, grew up in the Laguna Pueblo Reservation, went to law school, but she quit after she read Charles Dickens's Bleak House. She said, "The law has nothing to do with justice, and injustice can't be left unchallenged." So I decided to be a writer. Writing can't change the world overnight, but writing may have an enormous effect over time, over the long haul. Best known for her novel Ceremony, the story of a Laguna man named Tayo, who comes home to the reservation after surviving World War II and the Bataan Death March. And it's the anniversary of the shooting incident that came to be called the Boston Massacre, 1770, an argument between colonials and a British soldier. A crowd of men gathered, soldiers came out in the street. The crowd taunted them, threw ice at them, dared them to shoot, and they did, and five men were killed. The soldiers were put on trial. The lawyer chosen to represent them was John Adams, who managed to get all but two acquitted. It's the birthday of the mapmaker, Gerardus Mercator, born in Flanders in Belgium in 1512, who developed the technique for accurately projecting the globe onto a flat surface, so that longitude and latitude lines would always be at right angles to each other, which permitted sailors to plot a route between any two destinations in the world using a straight line and then follow that route without having to adjust their compasses. Here's a poem for today, a poem by Robert Louis Stevenson. Where go the boats? Dark brown is the river, golden is the sand. It flows along forever, with trees on either hand. Green leaves a-floating, castles of the foam, boats of mine a-boating, where will all come home? On goes the river, and out past the mill, away down the valley, away down the hill. Away down the river, 100 miles or more, other little children shall bring my boats ashore. Where Go the Boats by Robert Louis Stevenson. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by Lumosity, lumosity.com's daily online workouts are designed to improve memory and attention and are dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. More at lumosity.com. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
From the breaker fire, the tight-lipped coal and iron police won't get much sleep tonight, looking for the sons of Molly Maguire. Strong men are hiding their sorrow. Over at Pottstown, they're at the prison. 10 men are hanging tomorrow. I only tried to organize the men I worked among, but but I'm hanging in the morning where you miss me. And Monday early, so they say, the mines will open back. The coal and iron police are drinking whiskey. Out in the darkness, standing together, 10 men are lined on the gallows, holding a red rose, waiting for sunrise. King of the Mollies, Jack Kehoe. The trap is sprung and Molly's sons are traveling into time. Murdered by the man who hoped to hang her. But the unborn souls of Union men are all with her tonight. And the Pennsylvania pits are dark with anger.
Welcome back to a Juno Afternoon. It's 3:25 p.m., and that was the song called Molly Maguire, which is on Psycon's CD, Courage. And it is actually featured in the play coming up, Mother Jones in Heaven. And my guests now in the studio are Patricia Hall and Psycon. Welcome both of you to a Juno Afternoon.
Thank you.
Okay, it's wonderful to have you. And Patricia, you've got a long involvement in the arts in the Juno community, so for those people that don't know exactly who you are, give them a little background on yourself.
Well, I think that most people know me most for my portrayal of Patsy Cline, which was a show that I did back in 2006 and 2007. But I've done a lot of different things on Perseverance stage and with the opera, and so every musical group in town pretty much. Yeah.
All right, and Cy, it's a great pleasure to meet you.
Thank you so much.
You are not just a songwriter and performer, but you're also an activist and author. So it's just very good to have you here. And how did you and Patricia get hooked together and involved in this project?
Well, it's a good question. And I was lucky enough to be the guest artist at the Alaska Folk Festival last year. I came in early so I could hear all the different artists. It's a wonderful festival, by the way. I'm so impressed that you have 20 acts every night, 15 minutes each. And I guess the first night, the second night?
The first night.
There is a group. I have this new theory that Alaskans suffer from collective cabin fever. And that it manifests itself in very strange ways. One of those strange ways is the noodle of doom, right? I assume people have seen this, but it's, let's just say that visually, it's not your average folk group. So here is, on the right, I'm facing the stage, here is this woman dressed as a gypsy with, you know, hair flying in every direction, castanets, and not just a magnificent singer, but I thought, no, I'm looking at a trained actor. Because, you know, frankly, most folk and bluegrass musicians, to move on stage, you deduct 5 points. It's really against the official bluegrass code. And so I was just impressed. And I loved the aura. I loved the professionalism. I loved the heart. And as luck, I think, would have it, I ran into this somebody who looked sort of like, although it was about a foot shorter than she appeared on stage, to be honest. And although she is not short. But I said, was that you on stage? And she said, yeah. I said, and this is, well, it'd be interesting to see whether our versions coincide. But I basically said, you know, complimented on an extraordinary performance. And I said, do you ever do a one-woman show? And she told me about doing Patsy Cline. And I think said, yes, but I'm looking for another one.
I did, as a matter of fact. And so I said, well, as a matter of fact, I have one that he's been working on for many years about Mother Jones, the labor activist. And it's a musical. And that really intrigued me. And so he emailed it to me, and I read it. I was just really enchanted by it. He sent me some cuts of the music that he'd recorded, and I just fell in love with it. It was really love at first sight. And we had breakfast. We talked about it, and I got together with Art Roach over at Perseverance. We did a reading over there for Art, and he really liked it. And it's a good fit with the second stage program. One-person shows are really not a main stage kind of deal, so it fits well. Also, Mother Jones is called Mother Jones in Heaven, and her version of heaven is an Irish pub, where she gets to hold court and tell stories and drink beer. And so I wanted to do it in a pub atmosphere, and rather than a theatrical atmosphere, I wanted to have the audience feel that they were really having an evening with Mother Jones. And that's where we came up with the Silver Bowl.
Well, you came up with the Silver Bowl. Are we going to have mugs for the audience?
Oh, they'll have beer, they'll have wine, they can have food. It'll be a full-on pub experience. So,
and well, you know, it was wonderful to discover Patricia last night. I saw a run through for the first time, and you know, it's the experience of writing any kind of a play. It's a flat experience. The words lay there on the page. And no matter how many times you say them to yourself, even if you record them and listen back, I'm not a trained actor. And last night, I just had moment after moment of true ecstasy, is because Patricia is a real actor. And what she found in that, including some of the changes she made, it's just, I was heart-stopping. And I think that's not just because I was seeing it perform for the first time, because Mother Jones is such a passionate, such an eloquent, and such a wrenching character. This is not the poster Mother Jones. This is not, oh my God, she was the greatest labor activist and agitator we've ever had. She's wonderful. This is the human story with her faults and her foibles. I didn't want her to be a paper cutout character. I wanted us to see her as a young woman falling in love. I'm not going to give away the plot, even though it's all out there on the web. But I feel like Priscilla has really created a magical performance. You've got a great, Mike Moss
is our music director.
Did a wonderful job.
Yeah. So we alternate between guitar and piano for the music. And Cy gave us a lot of freedom to interpret the music in how we saw it really filling the show and fitting the show. And for example, there was one song where I just said, wow, she's really angry. And this song is written in a major key, and we got to do it in a minor key. And we did, and it worked beautifully in a minor key. So it was
cold minor key.
It was so wonderful to be given the artistic freedom to interpret the music and how we saw it filling the show.
Mm-hmm. But I just one more thing, which is, this is not a dark show. You know, this is not a serious political show. It's loving. It's very funny. It's a little on the raunchy side. I don't know if you'd bring the 5-year-old.
No.
You know.
The 12-year-olds and over.
Yeah, it's sort of PG-rated.
It's PG-rated. Yeah. 12-year-olds would be fun. I mean, it's fine. But, you know, she falls in love, and she's, you know, gets attracted, and she drinks, and she cusses. And so, I mean, I think I find it a – I say that because I think so often political theater people are like, oh, please, you know, gag me with a spoon. She's an outdated Valley Girl expression. This is not like this. This is a story of an extraordinary human being who overcomes and finds joy in everyday life and in political struggle. But it's a very up show. And I think, you know, Priscilla?
Who's Priscilla, honey?
She's the one from the desert. Priscilla of the desert.
Yeah, Priscilla of the desert, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Priscilla.
Probably Priscilla Long, who wrote a biography of Mother Jones.
Ah.
I'm seeing Terrence Stamp show up here.
Mother Jones would say, if that's me, I'm happy.
Well, thank you. You know, it's interesting to read her autobiography, where it's not really very personal at all. It's really a bibliography of her protests. When you read it, it's just a list of protests that she was involved with. So I think it's wonderful that Cy has really gone into all these different source materials and pulled out and created the full person. And you really understand her motivations, why she did what she did, and her foibles, too. And I think that that's a very important aspect of this character.
It's also true that the autobiography is heavily fraudulent.
Really?
Yeah. It was ghostwritten in her later years, and a lot of this stuff didn't quite happen.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Were any of the songs selected, you know, just specifically for the play, or do you have some things that you brought in and sort of manipulated to play a little bit to fit the song material?
That's always the key question. I think there are two songs that I pulled in of the 15. Everything else was written specifically for the show. And one, my music agent said, oh, you have to put in Houses on the Hill. And I hadn't even thought of it. But it fits perfectly.
It fits perfectly.
Yeah. Exactly. And there's one more song, and I won't tell the name of it. I said last night, I'm not sure it fits. So that was the other pull-in. But no, these were almost all written specifically for the show. I've done shows where I worked either with my songs that were pre-written or with other people's songs. And I think they're weaker, by and large, because, you know, there should be the storyline should be absolutely continuous. And my mentor in musical theater, a fellow named Mac Perkle, who founded the Tennessee Repertory Theater, said, you know, there is one storyline from beginning to end. The artistic and aesthetic choice is whether we move the action forward by song or by monologue or by dialogue. But everything must move the action forward. At the end of a song, we have to be in a different place than at the beginning of the song. You cannot stop the action, face the audience, and sing. So that's my theory of musical theater, and I think it works. Now, it's also true that over the years of working on the show, it's been a very long journey. You know, I've pulled a couple and put them on CDs, like Molly Maguire. That, and by the way, that is not Patricia's real voice. She actually is not a basso profundo. She's a person profundo, but not a basso profundo. And she does it is so great to hear somebody else do my songs, because I imagine them the way I imagined them. You know, Patricia, Priscilla's her witness protection. And I'm so sorry about letting that slip. I really, please take it back. Can you run the tape in reverse?
And I think the cat's already out of the bag on that one.
Well, anyway, yeah, it's. What can I say? That I will, if you don't love this show, I will buy you a beer afterwards. That's a pledge to the judo community. I mean it. Hold me to it.
All right, that's about the best recommendation that I could see. And since it's going to be in a pub, Guinness, or since I was over in Ireland last April, it's Smittix. I'd rather have that than the Guinness, but that's just me.
Well, you can find Cy, because he'll probably be wearing his Musicians United to Protect Bristol Bay sweatshirt in the show.
It's actually a tattoo. It's not a sweatshirt.
Oh, it's tattooed on your chest. All right.
It's a little rough up right now walking down the street, but, you know, I'm tough.
We have an open preview tomorrow, pay-as-you-can preview at 7:30 at the Silver Bow, and then our ticketed shows are Friday and Saturday at the Silver Bow. Sunday, we have a special 3 o'clock matinee, which is actually here at K2 in the TV studio. We're videotaping the show before a live audience. So it's a pay-as-you-can, and we encourage, especially students who may not be able to get into the Silver Bow because they're serving alcohol, to turn out for that 3 o'clock Sunday matinee. And then next week, we're back at the Silver Bow Thursday through Sunday. We have a 2 o'clock matinee on the 16th. And all the tickets, of course, are available online at the Jack, at Hearthside and Rainy Retreat Books.
Okay, Patricia, Cy, thank you very much for being my guest in the studio. It's a pleasure having you.
Hey, it was a great pleasure being here.
We'll see you at the show.
All right.
This is Bird Note. To celebrate the returning of spring, Poet Laureate Ted Kooser wrote Spring, the sky rippled with geese. Spring, the sky rippled with geese. But the green comes on slowly, timed to the ticking of downspouts. The pond, still numb from months of ice, reflects just one enthusiast this morning, a budding maple whose every twig is strung with beads of carved cinnabar, bittersweet red. Then, with singer Dawn Upshaw, jazz composer Maria Schneider put the poem to music.
Spring, the sky rippled with geese, but the green comes ticking of downspouts.
Here's Maria.
that's my favorite time of year, when you feel the geese coming north and just the littlest buds coming out and the sound of the dripping. It's so magical.
To welcome spring with Maria Schneider's music, begin at birdnote.org.
March 6th at the KTOO at 360 Performance Space for the next Writers Showcase. Creative short stories and personal essays by Alaska writers will be read aloud by Perseverance actors before a studio audience. The show will be recorded for later broadcast on 360 North TV and KTOO FM. Again, come join us on March 6th for the Writers Showcase at KTOO. More information at 360north.org.
The 2014 Gavel Alaska Guide is now available for free on iTunes. The Gavel Guide is an app filled with explainers on Alaska's legislative process, including how bills get passed, and more often, quietly killed, profiles of all 60 legislators, and animations showing why caucuses are more important than party affiliations. The Gavel Guide is available for the iPad through the iTunes Store. Visit 360north.org for more details, or a desktop-friendly version. The guide was made possible with generous support from Rockwell.
Good afternoon. This is Ken Fix. I'm your host today. And that was Spiders and Snakes. It must be Wildlife Wednesday. And Patricia Wary is in here to tell us a little bit about the Wildlife Wednesday presentation coming up this evening. Hi, Patricia.
Hello.
Nice having you here. Okay. Tell us about the show that's coming up tonight. This is the one that's the Habitat for Cowie Creek.
Mm-hmm. For the watershed, Davies and Cowie Creek. So it's an exciting area. It's one of the watersheds that Richard Karstensen, who is the presenter tonight, talks about in a new book that he has. And it's an area that has rather recently risen from a glacier rebound. So the flora and fauna in there has changed a lot. I think that should be a very interesting to see pictures and to hear his take on what's happened in that area.
Okay, what showed up again that wasn't there before?
Well, grizzly bears are starting to move into that area where it used to be dominated by black bears. So the grizzlies are starting to move in. Certainly, it was underwater for a long ways back in that Echo Cove, was water a long way back in there. And so now you have not just deciduous trees, but the spruce trees have started to come in there. You've got salmon rivers that have been established. There's a lot of changes that have happened in that drainage.
Okay. Anything else that was a surprise that you saw that showed up there that you weren't expecting?
Well, I'm going to have to wait just like everybody else tonight and find out from Richard.
Are you not going to tell me anymore about that?
No. Richard has his book that will be on sale there that talks about these different watersheds in the Juneau area. Plus, he's a number of co-authors to a book that's been reprinted, Nature in Southeast Alaska. Bob Armstrong is another one of those co-authors, and that's been reprinted and is going to be available tonight, too. We just learned this morning. And there is Thunder Mountain High School in the library. We meet 7 to 8 o'clock. It's free. We offer you wonderful goodies and a lot of just good fellowship and sharing of information by people interested in the outdoors.
Okay, what other background do you know about Richard, since he's going to be the presenter for this evening?
Right.
I know he's the author for Nature of Southeast Alaska, and he's one of the founders of the Discovery Southeast.
Yes.
So can you tell us a little bit more about his background?
Well, he's been a long time with Discovery Southeast, lots of research on his own, resulting in the very books that you named, the one that is his alone, and one he collaborated with Armstrong and some other people. I like the children's work that Discovery Southeast does and involved in the schools and as an outreach from the schools. I think that's pretty exciting work that he's been involved in there.
All right, and please remind everybody when the show is and where the show is tonight.
Okay, so we're going to see you at 7 o'clock, around 7 to 8 o'clock. Thunder Mountain High School is the high school in the valley, just up the road from the post office in the valley. And we meet on the second floor of the library. There's an escalator, or not an escalator, there's an elevator and stairs so people can have easy access to that second floor.
All right, and this show is entirely free. There's no charge to get into this whatsoever.
You don't have to eat our cookies, but they are very good.
Hey, everybody likes cookies. So I don't think you'll have any problem getting people to show up for something that's free and is going to feed you as well.
Our Wildlife Wednesdays are almost drawing to a close. This is our second to the last one that Alaska Wildlife Alliance, the Southeast chapter, brings. We have one more that will be coming on air about for the season.
Okay, so Richard Carstensen is going to be at the show tonight to do the presentation on what's in Cowie Creek.
The watershed that's Cowie Creek and Davies.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, be looking forward to that show. Thank you very much, Patricia, for being my guest in the studio today.
Thank you.
And now I've got a song to play from an artist that's going to be in town here at the Thunder Mountain High School on Friday. Her name's Ruth Moody. She's the founding, one of the founding members of the Wailing Jennies, and she regularly appears on NPR's Prairie Home Companion. This will be Friday, March 7th at 8 p.m. at the Thunder Mountain High School Auditorium. Here is Ruth Moody with a track called Cold Outside. Enjoy.
Tell you mine, 'cause I think it's time. think I know how to love you. I think I know how to love you. I think you know that I want to. I think you know that I want to. So come inside.
That was Ruth Moody with Cold Outside. That's from a CD called The Garden. And she is going to be here Friday evening, March 7th, 8 p.m. at Thunder Mountain High School Auditorium. She is one of the founding members of the Wailing Jennies, and she regularly appears on NPR's Prairie Home Companion. So show up and check out Ruth. She's very good. She's excellent. And my guest in the studio now is no stranger here. It's Matt Lillard, and he's here with an update on Eagle Crest. Hi, Matt. How's it going?
It's going pretty well. How about you?
Okay, great having you in here again. Last week's ski race on Saturday. Can you give us an update and tell us how that turned out?
That's right. We had the town downhill last Saturday under nice, bright, sunny skies and great, firm racing snow, and we had a wonderful race. We had about 70 people come out for the race, all ages from 10 and up, and we had the two overall winners. For the men was a gentleman named Chris Hinckley, and on the women's side was our own Hillary Lind, our silver medalist from the Olympics. So it was great to see everybody out racing. It was a fantastic course. We had a great barbecue at the end, and all in all, I think everybody had a great time.
All right. Yeah, Hillary happens to live right next door to me.
Very nice. So, she's
yeah,
fast.
On North Douglas. Yeah.
It's such a treat to see somebody like that ski, and you know, I think everybody can really appreciate something like that. So it was overall a great event, and we're really happy. It was such a success, and we look forward to doing it again next year.
All right. And what's going on at Eagle Crest this week?
Well, I think the biggest news is, as of Friday night, it might actually snow again in Juneau. So we're looking at snow coming in Friday through the weekend.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to the forecast yet, but yeah, I was going to save the bad news for the end here.
Well, you can never talk to a ski guy or an Eagle Crest guy without talking about snow.
All right.
But up on the mountain, obviously, if anybody's been up there, we've had some brilliant sunny skies. I think we're working on our goggle tans and our vitamin D. But it's time for some softer snow, for some powder skiing, and it looks like that comes back in starting Friday night. So we're definitely looking forward to it. And that's, you know, one of the big things we're excited about. We've also got, with March here, it's events are on the horizon. So this Saturday we've got the Women's Yes You Can, which is a women's only one-day workshop, which is a great event for women to get together and learn some new skills and be skiing and riding together. So definitely check that out online. And then on March 15th, we've got a rail jam called the Jib Jam, which will be out back of the Base Lodge. On Saturday afternoon, that's the 15th. So it's a new event for us and something we want to try, but we're really excited to do that event as well.
What exactly is a rail jam?
So in our terrain park, mainly skiers and snowboarders of the younger set, they actually slide down basically handrails that you'd see on a staircase, you know, downtown here in Juneau, but we set them up on the mountain and you know, they'll slide down it and do tricks and all these fun sorts of things and be awarded based on how well they do.
This is something that the old people don't attempt because we have that mortality factor working for us. It's like, I could kill myself doing that.
Yeah, you figure you take this nice soft snow and add hard steel to it, and you wouldn't think they go together. But
yeah,
it's really fun to watch, even if you don't do it. It's a good time.
Okay. And what else you guys got going on?
Well, I think the other big thing that we've kind of changed up this year is starting in March, so coming this Friday, we're going to be running the Black Bear Chair every Friday for all of March. And usually that's a chair that just runs on the weekends and holidays. But we figured there's a lot of times in March where there's some people that don't get up on weekends and holidays that would love to ride that chair and check out all the terrain over there. So we're going to take the Tuesday and Wednesday of spring break that we're open daily. We won't be running the Black Bear Chair that day, and in exchange we're going to run the Black Bear Chair on every Friday in March. So if it's a chair that you don't usually get to ride because you're not up on a Saturday or Sunday, definitely come up on Fridays. It's a blast to have it open that day, and we're looking forward to that as well.
Okay, and a reminder, when does the season come to a close?
The season comes to a close on Sunday, April 14th. So we're looking at about 30 days left.
I still have about a month left.
Certainly, and we're open every day for spring break as well, so that the week that the schools are off, we'll be open. So come on up as a family or send the kids up and get some peace and quiet at home.
All right, and the construction for the Porcupine Lodge, is that coming around on schedule? Does everything look like it's lining up for that?
Yeah, meetings are starting to get hot and heavy for that, and we're looking to break ground right after we close. So it's going to be a busy spring and a busy summer for us, but we're looking forward to finishing the season off strong, hopefully get a lot more snow. I think everybody in Juneau would rather have it snow on the mountain and be something other than snow down here, but we'll take it any way we can get it.
Do you guys create – there's some artificial snow, though, isn't there?
Yeah, we do have the ability to make our own snow, but it's really in the base area near the base of our lifts. We can't really open a trail other than the Porcupine area with man-made snow. So we do what we can, but really it comes down to natural snow, and usually we have it in spades, and it's just been a little bit dry the second half of this winter.
Right. Does that mean that it's icing up in spots?
I wouldn't. I come from the East Coast, and but
so
we call,
do I.
Yeah. So if you remember ice back there, this is nothing like back there. This is it's you know.
I remember getting off a lift, and the whole top of the slope was like a sheet that was like ice. And
yeah, this is good old Eastern packed powder. But for Juneau, it's relatively hard. But it's still been excellent skiing, and there's actually some moguls up there for people who like to ski moguls. I certainly am one of them. It's been fun to see those. And you know, whenever the sun's out, you can't complain. It's fun. But I'd like some powder.
Okay. Thank you very much, Matt, for the update on what's going on with Eagle Crest.
Thank you.
Longer days herald the coming of spring, and spring means it's time to open up and clean out your closet. This is the semi-annual KTOO used record CD and video sale. That time to purge those scratchy old LPs, CDs with years' worth of fingerprints, and videos you've seen so many times you've got them memorized. And donate them to KTOO for the sale, scheduled for Saturday, March 29th. Bring them to the station at the corner of Egan and Whittier the week of March 24th. You'll feel better, lighter, and happy that you have lots of room for more media. For more information, contact Jeff Brown at 463-6425 or by email at jeff@ktoo.org. Thanks.
I sought help in getting health insurance because it was so confusing. It was great to talk to someone who could answer my questions. After setting up an account, I had lots of choices, and I picked a plan that was best for me. I'm amazed with the medical coverage I can now afford. I left feeling so happy.
March 31st is the deadline to enroll in Marketplace Insurance. To get local assistance, call United Way at 211 or Search at 966-8883. This message is brought to you by Search, your partner in health.
Welcome back to A Juneau Afternoon. It's 3:57 p.m. I'm Ken Fix. I've been your host today. The forecast for this evening in Juneau is sunny with highs in the low to mid-20s, northeast winds at 10 to 20 miles an hour, increasing to 15 to 25 in the afternoon near downtown Juneau and Douglas. And otherwise, the winds are going to be back down to 15 overnight. Lows are going to be in the low teens to single digits. And northeast winds again pick up at 15 to 25 with higher gusts near downtown Juneau and Douglas for tomorrow afternoon. And like we let out of the bag a little earlier, there's a chance of snow starting on Friday, and snow with rain may be mixing in by Saturday with highs in the upper 30s, although that means that the ski area is probably going to get quite a bit of good powder at the top. So it's been my pleasure to be hosting for you today. Tomorrow at 3 o'clock on the Juneau Afternoon Show, Shauna Strausser is going to be the host, and she's going to talk about the Perseverance Theater's upcoming production of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. That's a great play. You should see that one. M.K. McNaughton will be here to highlight her first Friday show this week. We'll talk with Rachel Jusler about her first Friday show, Favorite Things. Beth Weigel will be here with an update on the library activities, and Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. All that, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Show, music, and more, Thursday at 3 p.m. on A Juneau Afternoon. And this is KTOO in Juneau. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Digital Cable, Channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. And support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. Thank you for tuning in today.
And I'm going to leave you with a little bit of Colby Calais, and we'll be back into the show programming in just a moment or two, and it should be All Things Considered. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great day.
Budget that begins to make the hard choices that will have to be made. The longer we defer these difficult decisions, the more risk we will have down the road.
The Secretary of Defense testifies before Congress.
Today is Wednesday, March 5th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Alyssa Block. Coming up, Secretary Chuck Hagel testified on a smaller defense budget and the U.S. role in Ukraine.
Plus these stories, an update on the drought in California.
A scientist who's figured out how to use wood to filter water.
And grassroots groups dig into the president's initiative to empower boys of color and raise questions about how it will work.
We don't want to have standards that are based around what is wrong with black kids. We don't want that.
Also, Paralympian skiing.